The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Retronauts is part of the Greenlit Podcast Network. For more information, please go to greenlitpodcasts.com.
This week on Retronauts, there's a solid snake in my boot. Yeehaw, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Retronauts. I'm your host for this one, Bob Mackey, and I'm the sheriff in this town. And today's topic is all about cowboy and Western games. Before I continue, who is across from me in the same room? I'm giving everybody a Wild West nickname.
Howdy, partner. It's Henry Gilbert. Have Zapper Will Travel.
And Henry is one mean hombre. who is my co-host of Retronauts and currently in North Carolina, not part of the Old West?
That is me, Jeremy Parrish, the Hans Gruber of this cowboy episode.
And Jeremy's a low-down varmint. And who else do we have on this podcast?
I'm Nina Matsumoto, and they never let me join in any cowboy games.
It's true. Nina is a filly. I tried to find non-offensive terms for women in the Old West, and there really aren't any. I'm not going to call.
All you can hope for is a small horse.
Exactly. I'm not going to.
You can at least make me sound dangerous. Come on.
You're not a Montgomery Ward woman. That's. I'm just looking at a list of cowboy slang right now. But yes. Thanks for joining us for another episode of Retronauts. This is all about cowboy games, and this is the topic comes at the request of Nina Matsumoto, and we were going to record this at Midwest Gaming Expo, but someone poisoned the water hole, and by that I mean we're dealing with a pandemic. But Nina, why did you want to do this topic?
Well, I'm a big fan of Westerns, and I'm not really quite sure why. Like, I can't pinpoint a time in my life where I realized I liked them. Though I might have found my answer while taking notes for this episode, so stay tuned for that.
Okay.
And I want to make clear that I've always been fond of the romanticized, like fictionalized, gunslinging aspect of the Wild West world, not the ugly historical side of it. I prefer the cheesier, more stylized takes on it, and I just love that rustic aesthetic of like lawless towns, cool mysterious strangers, desert imagery, and the music. The music is so good.
Yeah, the more of the frontier land version of American history.
Exactly, that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, so this episode is going to be a survey of Western and cowboy games that I curated myself. I know I'm leaving things out, and if I did, I do it on purpose, just to piss you off, the listener at home. No, I just decided here are the most important ones, and we're going to talk all about them. This will go up until the year 2000, but then Nina has a few after that she wants to discuss as well after our initial segment.
Yeah, I used to casually collect games, and for a few years I was collecting cowboy games. That was more like within the past 10 years, I just realized like I like cowboy stuff, and there's a lot of cowboy games out there, and they're a lot of fun. So I would just start collecting any retro cowboy game I could find. A lot of them are like way too old, though, for me to find at a reasonable price or to be able to enjoy.
Well, yeah, a lot of the things we're covering on this episode are not playable today unless you pirate them. Very few of these things you can actually download digitally, and a lot of the carts are really hard to find. But To provide more context for this, I don't know. I would need a lot more time to describe like what the Western is and what the genre is, but it was really in decline as video games were taking off. Like, I really want to say, and this could be just me being reductive, but like the Cultural Revolution of the late 60s was pushing back on a more conservative black and white morality of the Western, and basically all of the TV shows, all the popular Westerns on TV and the movies, they basically ended in the 60s or 70s. And I was looking, I was like, were there any like big Western TV series after the 1970s? And the only one I could find was Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman was like one of the few that lasted more than a season. But like,
what about Briscoe County Jr.?
That's a one season.
That's one
show,
season, yeah. So it's like,
oh, really? Okay. Well,
Gunsmoke was like, or Bonanza, one of them. It's like Gunsmoke, Bonanza, Wagon Train, all of these, they like had like 600 episodes and they ran for like 20 years. But then, like, once the 70s happened, those were all just dead. Mm-hmm. And the 70s also, that's when video games happened. So Western as a genre was like on life support and dying in the 70s. And then like everything after the 70s, Western involved for the most part was like a comment on the Western and like about the death of the West. And now even that is like the most stereotypical kind of Western you can make.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood basically is about how that all died and went away. Yeah, that's like so many Western films after they've just been postmodern ever since, really. They're just comments on previous Westerns or people who like Westerns or also just about, like, you know, the American view of masculinity. It's a lot about that too, and a whole bunch of dad stuff, a lot of dad stuff mixed in there too.
Yeah, like I mentioned, I like the romanticized version of the West, and when they're more realistic, they're just too bleak and depressing. Like the movie Unforgiven, which is an amazing film and a really good subversion of the Western genre, but Unforgiven feels like it would be the Watchmen of cowboy films, because after that everyone was like, oh, what if Westerns weren't fun actually?
Yeah, things
but
like
I like my stuff to be stylized. Like when it comes to fantasy genre, I prefer Lord of the Rings over Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I prefer Sunset Riders to Deadwood or something like that, where it's like everyone stinks, everyone's dying, everyone's being murdered in horrible, grisly ways.
See, Deadwood, that's a successful Western. Yeah. Though it was like the least popular show on HBO and canceled in 3 seasons.
Exactly.
So, but,
I actually could not get into Deadwood.
It's one of my all-time favorite shows.
I know it's like, a lot of people's favorite. That's why I was excited to check it out. But again, I just like the hokier, cheesier Westerns more so than Deadwood stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But I do like Westworld, at least the first season of it. Mm. And I never watched the other ones.
Deadwood is about the grime and violence and filth of it all, and also saying a swear every 4 words.
Too much swearing for me. I'm a good girl.
For her gentle ears.
Like swears.
But yeah, like I wanted to ask everybody what their experience with Westerns is, because mine is very limited. The extent of it is like Back to the Future 3, one act of that movie, and then the original Westworld 70s movie, which is more about an evil robot chasing you. So I think it's pretty fun, and I have enjoyed games of the genre, but I'm not really big into Western. I'm more into pre-war, like detective stuff is more fun for me than Westerns. How does everybody else feel about Westerns? Henry, you mentioned you like Deadwood.
Oh yeah, I'm a big Western fan, though. My favorites are the kind of postmodern ones. Like when in a film class in college, when we watched Stagecoach, I was like, I see the quality of this, but I'd rather watch The Searchers, which is about an old shitty cowboy trying to work in a world that's left him behind. And the Sergio Leone cowboy spaghetti Westerns, like those were my favorites. Like those just loved the style of Western, but it came at it from a different angle. And then on top of that, I also did go through a real Clint Eastwood phase. I really enjoyed his work. And also, I haven't seen every Sam Peckinpah movie, but The Wild Bunch is another of my favorites. Like, but those are the ones I like that are about how the West was a lie, it's actually insanely violent and amoral, and it's about people trying to find some form of justice in an unjust world that's full of chaos and there's no law to it. Like, those are my favorite Westerns. And when I would play Western video games, I will say I really love games like Red Dead Redemption. But when I played them, I was like, well, I've seen a lot of the movies they're pulling from in this. So it feels less original to me, even though it's fun to play through it in a game.
You made me remember that another movie I like out of the three Westerns I've seen is High Noon, which is not even, it's a Western, but it's an allegory for the Red Scare. So there's a lot more going on there. Jeremy, how about you? Western experience. You are a Texas lad, aren't you?
Maybe it's because I was born in the 70s as the Western was declining, but I'm kind of the anti-Nina. Like, when I see something as a Western, I just completely disassociate. I'm like, yeah, not interested. I just cannot bring myself to care about Westerns. I don't know what it is, but maybe it's because it's, you know, like a 30-year slice of American history where everything is going to be brown and dusty and depressing, and there's not going to be a lot of women. There's not going to be a lot of basically non-white dudes in any sort of authority. You know, when you're playing a video game, your weapons are going to be revolvers, and that's it. Mm-hmm. There's just not much to it. And I don't know. I guess I feel like if I wanted, you know, that experience of flinty-eyed people in a dusty hellhole environment, basically being racist and sexist, I would have just stayed in West Texas.
That's true. You are you're betraying your Texan roots by casting off your love of Westerns.
Well, bear in mind, I don't have real roots in Texas. I lived there for a long time, but that's not where I was born, and clearly, I just didn't belong. So, yeah, like I don't really enjoy any Western films or TV series or games that aren't basically like, oh, we used Western trappings to do something completely different. Like Back to the Future 3 is probably about as good as it gets. Or, you know, like I was trying to name some other Western games for this episode, but then I realized like all of them are just like sci-fi or fantasy stories that just happen to have, you know, 10-gallon hats like Wild Arms or SteamWorld Dig, which is about steam-powered robots in a dusty old West planet. So, yeah, I'm going to be the outsider here. Sorry.
Oh, looks like we've got ourselves an outsider here.
We don't take kindly to those type of folks here.
I'm going
to
insert a spittoon noise. So Jeremy will now, for now, be known as the anti-Nina.
I have a quick question for Jeremy, though. Do you like samurai stuff?
Not really that much either. I know those two genres are very intertwined, at least in Western media, but yeah, like not really my thing either.
Okay, interesting. Well, I jokingly call myself a reverse weeaboo because I'm Japanese, but I love cowboys and Southern food, and I've gone to Arizona and Texas many times, and every time I go, I'm delighted by all the cowboy motifs I see there, whereas my friends who live there are just sick of it. And I'm just like, oh, I love this stuff.
So you're a Westaboo.
Yeah.
Westaboo.
Yeah. And I actually used to wear a cowboy hat for like a couple of years.
Oh, that's cool.
Just like every day.
Oh, man. I missed the Nina cowboy hat era.
You missed like the cowboy Nina era. Yes.
I bought in far too late.
I wore and a red one.
Wow. We're bringing it back once I move there, by the way. Matching cowboy hats wherever we go.
The thing is, though, I was more inspired by the Devil's Haircut music video.
Okay.
Which was inspired by Midnight Cowboy, which I didn't know at the time because I had not seen that movie.
Not about cowboys, believe it or
no,
not.
No, it's not. Going to the movie theater to see it, I'm like, that wasn't what I expected. No, actually, I'm not a big movie buff. So, like, I do like watching Western films, but I don't really seek them out too much. So there's a ton of like great Western movies I haven't seen. Although, yeah, I think the first Western movie I saw was Back to the Future 3. Like,
oh, Bob. Me too.
Yeah, that counts, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's explicitly a Western for about, like, I'd say about a third of the movie.
Oh, at least a third.
Yeah, like 60% of the movie, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was the first one I saw. And then I saw Wild Wild West with Will Smith.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. But then later on, I would start watching more actual Westerns. So my favorite is it's cliche, but it's the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, because it's such a good film. Even people who don't like Westerns, I think, would love that movie if they saw it.
That whole trilogy is great, but yeah, that's the best one. Yeah,
that was the best one of that trilogy for sure. And I also love The Quick and the Dead, the Sam Raimi film.
Oh,
it is
I
such
love
a Sam
movie.
Raimi film. It's so much fun. And Bob, we got to watch that sometime. I know you like Sam Raimi.
Love, as a white guy born in the 80s, I'm obligated to.
You know what they don't do enough of are tournament movies. And that's a tournament movie. And I love those. Yeah, it's basically like a Street Fighter.
My money's on The Quick.
I just wanted to quickly list off some honorable mentions, though. So there's Dead Man in 1985 that stars Johnny Depp. That's an interesting one. The 2010 True Grit by the Coen brothers.
Mm-hmm. Like that one, yeah.
Yeah, that one's really good. Pale Rider, 1985. It's a lesser appreciated Eastwood film. Got kind of like a supernatural religious slant to it. And also two Asian cowboy movies. There's Sukiyaki Western Django in 2007 by Takashi Miike. There's a cameo by Quentin Tarantino. And it answers a question of what if the descendants of the Genji and the Heike clan became cowboys, and also the character of Django is there. So it's a cool blend of samurai and cowboy aesthetic. And also there's The Good, the Bad, and the Weird, a 2008 Korean film, which is an even better blend of Asian aesthetic combined with the Wild West.
Ooh, I haven't seen that one. I want to check that out.
All those are recommended.
So yeah, we got a lot of recommendations up front in terms of like Western movies.
You know, another one, True Grit, that reminded me too. I really like the other straight up Western the Coens did, the Ballad of Buster Scruggs that just came out, which really is just like an anthology film they did. But it's really good. It's great to see them go back to the Old West stuff. But yeah, True Grit, both film adaptations about it, they both fall into the thing of like, oh, the end of the West. Like, here's the old gunslinger and the West is almost over. Mm-hmm. And another, you know, another thing that really got me on my Western kick was being a teen in the 90s reading Preacher. Preacher is a Western comic book. And all they do is talk about cowboy movies, which I was like, Preacher's so cool. I got to watch all the cowboy movies they mention in this
comic.
Doesn't
like the ghost of John Wayne talk to him or something?
Oh, yes.
Okay,
yeah,
I thought so.
Yep.
Hey, it was cool at the time.
There aren't too many cowboy comics out there that are super popular, are there?
No, not
that was a 60s thing, really. That also went by the wayside.
There's a modern one called Pretty Deadly that's really cool.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's a Kelly Sue DeConnick one, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's really gorgeous artwork.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we covered a lot of the context of like what Westerns are, some good movies. Now we're going to see like the games that drew from all of that stuff. And the first one on my list is one of two Wild Gunman games by Nintendo. And this is not a video game. And if you were at our PRGE live show in 2018, I was doing a little video history of full motion video games. And this is one of Nintendo's super, super early ones. And I want to say, like, Nintendo invented the full motion video game. Jeremy, you know a lot about Nintendo history. Is that claim accurate? They were pioneers.
I think it's definitely make a case for it. I don't remember exactly if there were other projection-based games before that. But, I mean, that was technology that Nintendo invented for their Duck Hunt. And before that, the laser clay shooting system. And you know, that was the solution to a problem, which was, well, there's all these bowling alleys that are just sitting empty in Japan, and no one bowls because that fad lasted for like a year and then went away. So what can we do with all this space? So they were like, let's turn it into a virtual shooting range. So they came up with a projection system, and then the oil crisis hit, the OPEC oil crisis in the 70s, and they were like, well, we got to make these video projection things a lot smaller and use a lot less plastic. So they came up with a booth where you could shoot guys who, you know, cowboys or banditos or whoever. And yeah, so I would say this was, I'm pretty sure, was the first projection based game system, kind of building on the legacy of what they had come up with before.
Yeah, I love the history of Nintendo's pre-video game stuff, you know, products, and this is one of them. And we mentioned it before, but it was part of something they had called the simulation system, in which it was a 16mm film technology that could mechanically switch to different tracks of film depending on the outcome of the game. So in this game, it's just like Wild Gunman for the NES, in which you fire your gun when the enemy's eyes flash, except in this version, it is live action footage of people, and I don't think it matters where you're shooting your gun on the screen because the technology is not that advanced yet. It's just that you're shooting at the right time. And if you watch this footage online, you can watch a YouTube video of some of this footage. It's very creepy because there's no music. It's just very eerie, either silence or just like the sounds of like hooves on like dirt roads. It's kind
of
weird.
The age of the film stock too, like it's creepy in how old it all looks like, but the invention of it definitely feels like what a toy company would make, not a video game company too.
Yeah, and it is interesting. I would like to see like how this actually played out, but I have to imagine like none of these machines survived, or like the film all deteriorated because it's just 16mm film. But yeah, this would eventually become a game we'll talk about later. And this is just one of many simulation system games, and it's fun to read about these because there were a lot of weird ones in the works, and one of them that they didn't develop actually in full was called Fascination, and that is where you are shooting the clothes off of a Swedish model as she dances around.
Whoa.
So Nintendo was getting into the horny games market, or at least trying to, but they missed out on joining the burgeoning porno industry of the 70s, I guess.
Yeah, that was their connection between video games and their Love Hotel business model.
Exactly. If you show up to the Love Hotel alone, you can still play Fascination in private, I guess. But yeah, so that's like literally the first cowboy video game, and it's not even a video game, but I mean, it's made by Nintendo. It's kind of a game, and it is an interesting like artifact of history. But basically, the next four games are all essentially the same kind of game in a genre that never really exploded as much as like your Pac-Man clones or your Space Invaders clones did. It was a very short-lived genre, the cowboy versus cowboy genre, and it only really existed for the latter half of the 70s.
You know, I'd never seen Wild Gunman before until I was researching for this episode. And I have to say, I love it a lot. The video of it, it's like, it's so grainy and kind of creepy. And spooky westerns are like among my favorite. Like when supernatural junk is laced into cowboy junk, that's totally my jam. And I like how like, when it's all strung together, like in this YouTube video you can find, I feel like if I don't show someone else, a cowboy's going to crawl out of my TV in 7 days and kill me.
It's a real Sadako thing with the creepy glowing eyes on the characters, yeah, when you're supposed to shoot them.
It's amazing.
But yeah, the next one on my list is a 1975 game called Gunfight. Again, this is all part of the same like cowboy versus cowboy genre. This is actually a very important game that most people don't talk about. I didn't know about it until I did this history. So it's known as Western Gun in Japan, and it's created by the creator of Space Invaders, Tomohiro Nishikado. 3 years before that game, he created this. Two very important things about this game. It's the first murder simulator on record because it is the first human against human combat depicted in a video game. So that is like the future of all video games. It's happening in Gunfight or Western Gun. And also the American version of this game that Midway developed is the first arcade game or video game in general that uses a microprocessor for its gameplay and wow, graphics and whatnot. So two very important qualities of this game that nobody ever talks about, developed by one of the most important people in video game history, the creator of Space Invaders.
On Game Center CX, when they interviewed that creator, he explained how at first they were going to make the aliens people, but they thought that would be too violent. So that's why they made them aliens instead. But I wonder what made them change their mind so quickly.
I guess if you're just shooting another cowboy, it's fine, but if you're shooting like a swarm of people, that's just that is the future of games. So
yeah,
one murder.
I mean, yeah,
that's
you're right.
Kind of the iconic Western concept, you know, the showdown, the high noon gun out or shootout at the corral or, you know, at the town hall or whatever. So I guess, you know, they kind of coasted in on like they drafted in on an existing trope in media. So it didn't seem excessively violent. It was just, you know, that's just this established genre. It's been
true
that way for so long.
They even have that in Kirby.
Oh yeah,
that's true.
I love
draw
that one. Yeah, the well, also in like 75, so many games were just like they use Pong as a base, and then they build something out from there. And so a concept of, well, you have two things on each side of the screen facing each other. What are they going to do with each other? Shooting bullets at each other is, you can see the natural evolution of that idea.
Yeah, it's sort of like, what if the paddle was a person and the point was to not hit the ball, like to avoid the ball.
And these cowboys are adorable, and the cactuses look like coat racks. I love it.
Yeah, the little wagons that go by, like, so yeah, this, because it's 1975, you're not playing against the computer controlled opponent. We don't have that technology yet to have like AI even for a game this simple, so you have to play it with another player. And the bullets that you fire one at a time follow Pong logic, and that you can ricochet them off of the sides of the walls and stuff like that. And again, so a lot of these early games are twin stick shooters in a very weird way, before we just have a joystick button and a fire button, in that you have a movement control with one joystick and then a fire control with another joystick, where you can fire and move in 8 different directions. So it's surprisingly complex for a game from 1975. And
so what you're saying is that Robotron 2084 is actually Westworld?
It is, yes.
Western game concept, and makes it about robots.
I was honestly surprised as to how many of these games are twin stick shooters in a very, very primitive sense. But yeah, like, as you I don't know how the how you get into these more complex environments, but like, as you progress, or I guess maybe even randomly, the backgrounds are more complex. Like, there'll be cactuses in the way, there'll be like wagon trains that go up the screen and things like that. But again, it is just like a weird variant of Pong, or what I think is like more it's more like the Atari 2600 game Combat, where it's just like one thing versus another thing. You have like one bullet at a time, and maybe they look like what they're supposed to look like. So up next we have Outlaw. That's the 1976 Atari game, which is essentially Atari saying, we can make Gunfight, why can't we do that?
That the VCS version video you linked to that I watched, like, that's the one where they look the least like cowboys. Like, when they have their arms ready to draw, they both look like pretzels, which I had a good little laugh at. Just the idea of two pretzels shooting at each other.
Why would these pretzels hurt each other? But yeah, so the VCS version, there's only a video of that, and that's like, that is basically just Combat with cowboys, the Atari game Combat. The arcade game is actually a light gun game, in that it is a like a rudimentary quick draw game with black and white graphics and a color overlay. You need to draw your gun as soon as your opponent draws their gun and shoot him before he shoots you. And there aren't that as many light gun games as you would think. This is just one of them. And this is 1976, so still not a lot is going on tech-wise to make these games very complex. But there are two different opponents. One is more accurate, while one is faster on the draw, and you don't need another person to play this video game. So the future of video games is being friendless, and we're getting there in 1976.
If you look at the cover art, it's just the outlaw, Josie Wales. They just straight up ripped it off.
Oh, really?
They didn't
okay.
try to hide it. Yeah.
Like
yeah.
the cabinet art?
Oh, no, not the arcade version.
Oh, the 2600 version. For whatever reason, this is the only game I couldn't find footage of, a YouTube footage of. I could only find footage of the 2600 game. But yeah, it is a very rudimentary light gun game, a quick draw game. I don't think it's actually paying attention to where you're firing, just that you're firing.
I have seen Josie Wales, by the way. I didn't actually like it, even though it's a classic.
Mm-hmm. I have not seen it.
I wanted to endorse a panel another gaming podcast did, actually. In MAGFest 2016, I went to this panel, which was recorded, so you can watch it, the whole thing on YouTube, called Atari Game Design by a gaming podcast called Geek Nights. And it's all about how you can learn so much about good game design by studying Atari games because of how simple they are. And they spent a long time analyzing Outlaw, and they explain what makes this game so good and so simple. It's kind of like how Dive Kick is such a simple game, but because of that, it requires like advanced tactics.
Yeah, I guess there is like video footage of Outlaw, and I think you can emulate that game very easily, unlike the arcade game. So that is one that's easy to just kind of pick apart. I really would like to see how this arcade game actually plays, but again, I couldn't find any footage of it, and I don't know if you could emulate something like this. But yeah, so that is Outlaw, and Boot Hill is up next. Again, these are very, very simple ones. We'll get to more complex ones very soon, but Boot Hill is basically Midway pulling a Miss Pac-Man before Miss Pac-Man, where it's like, okay, we brought over this Japanese game. What if we made a sequel without their permission? In this case, I don't think Taito cared very much or didn't know, unlike Namco, who found out about Miss Pac-Man. But yeah, this Boot Hill game is essentially a follow-up to Gunfight. It's slightly more complex, and there are videos of this online, and there's some technical improvements. Like, there is some degree of scaling in the graphics, very rudimentary, but the cowboys get larger as they get closer to the player on the screen and smaller as they get further into the background. And
really impressed by that. It reminded me of Monkey Island 1 and 2.
Yeah, and this is only 1977, so kind of scaling in a game, as, you know, rudimentary as it is, still impressive. And when you shoot the other player and they die, they turn into a gravestone and they go back to the Boot Hill in the background before the grave disappears. So fun little effects that were very impressive pre-1980.
And they mix up the music that plays through Death Jingle, too. I'm using Simpsons understanding here when I talk about a Death Jingle.
But... it is a Death Jingle. Yeah, I mean, yeah. There's not like full orchestration or anything.
Mm-hmm. And it's like a painted on background for it, right?
Yeah, it's like a single color graphics over in front of a color overlay or underlay, rather, whatever you want to call it.
I think it's probably, just looking at it, I think it's probably based with mirrors, like they did with the Space Invaders, where you got like the scenery of the moon or whatever on certain versions of Space Invaders. And it's done by having the monitor upside down and then projected up against a mirror that also has the painting applied to it. So you get this kind of layered effect where you get the monochrome black and white graphics over a color overlay by basically just using mirrors.
The background art has some slight perspective issues. I think you kind of walk on the sky and we go back, but that's fine. It's still impressive, the scaling.
It is neat, and like all of these games, I was playing games in arcades as early as, like, I don't know, 88. I still never see things pre-1980 or like pre-Pac-Man unless I am at Portland Retro Gaming Expo. So next time I'm at any of these cons, if we have them again, I do want to find these machines, because I have never seen these three to date. Or maybe I have and just didn't realize how important they were.
I feel like I probably have walked by these at California Extreme.
They'd be there too.
And haven't given them a second thought, but I was too distracted by Puyan. I wanted to play that.
Or that really bad unreleased Beavis and Butthead game I think I played through a lot of that at my last Retro Gaming Expo.
But it's funny.
Honestly, I was playing video games and arcades in, like, 1982, 83. And to be honest, you didn't see a lot of pre-Pac-Man stuff even then. You know, you'd see, like, Space Invaders or Atari Football or something. But I don't think video games really got big and started becoming, you know, produced in massive quantities until after Pac-Man. And then that was kind of the golden age of the arcades. So, you know, even back in the day, as someone who was obsessed with video games as a kid and, you know, had pretty regular access to arcades, like, these are all new to me. These are not games that I saw out there and about. I mean, anything that was kind of, you know, pre-Pac-Man, pre-Invaders, it just was too primitive to stand up against the kind of the flood of innovation and technical advancement that happened in 1981, 82. I'd love to find these myself.
None of the games we're talking about so far have color graphics. They're just like single color graphics, just like one color at a time.
But if this strategy hadn't worked out for Midway, maybe we would have never gotten to Miss Pac-Man, you know, if Boot Hill hadn't succeeded first.
Outlaw has some color, the home version.
It does? Different colors on the sprites?
Well, the home version is a 2600 game, right?
Yeah,
That was a color console. But in arcades, you didn't see color until like 78 or so.
Yeah, yeah. So the Outlaw, I mean, I just included that video in my notes because it's like the only version of Outlaw I can find. But the Outlaw home version is very different than the arcade version. I know we're all getting impatient, but finally we could talk about Nintendo.
Yeah.
So, Sheriff, 1979 by Nintendo. This is from the dark age of Nintendo arcade games before Donkey Kong, and I'm pretty sure that the WarioWare series made us aware of what Sheriff was, because I never knew about Sheriff, never saw it, And it is an interesting game, even though it is kind of a failure on Nintendo's part. But it did see a sequel in Japan that is super hard to find information about.
I tried looking for information, too, in Japanese Google, and I couldn't.
The Sheriff stuff, too, it's a lot of Smash Brothers players learned about him when he was the yellow Sheriff taking over the screen was a trophy attack in the Wii U one.
I totally forgot about that guy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this game...
I love the sprite work in this game, by the way.
I want to talk about that. Let me go over who made the game really quick, though. So Genya Takeda is the designer of this game, and our bro Shigeru Miyamoto did the art for the game, and I believe the art for the cabinet as well. It is very Miyamoto-y work of that time. And it is like it's Nintendo innovating within a genre that exists, innovating within a game type that exists, which is pretty neat to see in that it is the cowboy game, but also we are a year out from Space Invaders. So it is almost like a take on Space Invaders with a Western motif in that instead of the invaders marching down from the top of the screen, you are in the center of the screen and these little banditos are sort of dancing around you and occasionally going into your little square. So it's like Space Invaders, but a lot more complex just a year later.
It's kind of like they're mocking you as they dance around. Makes you want to shoot them more.
It is true.
And you're surrounded by them. They're taunting you and going around you in a circle. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the cowboy, the lead cowboy that you're playing as, is supposed to have a mustache, but it looks like a big frown instead.
Yeah, I was always wondering what was going on. Like, the graphics in this game, I think aesthetically they are ugly, but they're also charming. And I think also they do a really good job of conveying, like, which direction you're facing, because your cowboy in this game is just, like, this horrible little chibi mutant with this, like, permascowl on his face that I guess is a mustache. But, like, he is so weird-looking. But the weirdness of his design always shows you like which way he's facing and which way his gun is pointing, because he holds his gun in a very stupid way as well. Mm-hmm. And it's like everything is nothing is really to scale, but it's all conveying visual information that tells the player like I am facing this way, because again, this is a twin stick shooter, except it's very odd. And you know, they're still figuring out controls at this time, in which you have a movement joystick and a control dial for which way you're aiming. So you're turning a dial to aim and pressing a button on that dial, I believe, to fire. So again, like 8-way control, 8-way firing, it's much different than Space Invaders, but it has similar concepts. Like there are little things that enemies can't shoot through until they destroy them, and you can either, you know, hide behind those or shoot through them yourself to take out the enemies. And yeah, it's pretty interesting. Jeremy, you have any takes on Sheriff?
So looking at the dates on this, it's really interesting because it shipped in Japan about 3 months before a game by Namco called Navarone, which is kind of the opposite, like the inverse of Sheriff. It seems like this kind of idea of moving around a field, you know, kind of expanding the invaders concept in that direction was something people were starting to sort of workshop and experiment with. So Navarone, instead of being a sheriff in the center of the screen, defending yourself against things attacking from the edges of the screen, you're actually a boat patrolling the edges of the screen, firing inward toward this enemy base in the center. But like it just feels like they're natural complements to one another. And again, they were produced and distributed about 3 months apart. So it just seems like there was kind of a thing happening, you know, like people were exploring invader concepts in interesting new ways and sort of landed on similar results. And so it's always interesting to see things like that. But yeah, like I can definitely sense, you know, the sense of artistry that you would begin to get from Nintendo games here. This was produced for very primitive hardware compared to Donkey Kong. But, you know, in terms of the narrative, in terms of the design and artistry, they were definitely moving toward the Nintendo that we know now, as opposed to just like, hey, we made a Pong clone. Hey, we made an Invaders clone. It's something new and different.
Yeah, and I believe Exidy brought this over to America as something called as Bandito. They localized it. But I found this article. I was like, oh, because what I was doing during this research process, I was looking at the actual arcade cabinets to just see the controls and see the art and everything, because arcade cabinet art is often very beautiful. I couldn't find Bandito, and I was like, oh, what did the Sheriff cabinet look like? And I found this article on Nintendo Life about this arcade cabinet collector who was trying so hard to find sheriff cabinets. And apparently there were like two known in existence. I don't know what happened to them, but just like two that were on the market that he was able to find. And these are just so pretty. They have this great like faux, like looking like wood planks, like wooden floor planks all over the cabinet on the sides with like wood burned stencils that say Nintendo Sheriff and like little wood burned stencils of all the characters around the cabinet. And also on the front of the cabinet around the screen, all this great like Miyamoto art, very much of that era of like Donkey Kong and Mario Brothers and Donkey Kong Jr. and things like that. I would recommend looking up that Nintendo Life article, just like Nintendo Life Sheriff arcade cabinet, because it is a gorgeous looking cabinet.
Yeah, I would love to own this. I know it'll never happen.
You have to talk to that guy, I guess.
Wood paneled electronics in general, I just love. It's gorgeous. Whatever he paid, it was worth it. But I also, when you see the game too, I see so much of what Donkey Kong would do in there. Like there is a little story between every level, and it ends with the two characters together and a heart appearing over their head, or actually a giant heart made of little hearts. So pretty much
like
how,
in Popeye.
Or I was going to say like, well, yeah, it's Popeye, but yeah, I was going to say Jumpman and Pauline together at the end of Donkey Kong. But yeah, you can see so much of that in this like silly little flat game. Like Miyamoto, I think, especially with the art and trying to tell simple two act or three act stories in it, he's struggling against the confines of it already in this game.
Yeah, I've seen that on the record. People have said, and again, it's always hard to find the first. It's always more interesting and, you know, easier to find the thing that was the most important. But this could be like the first game with a story told in the game. But in Donkey Kong, it's more of like the four panel manga, and that there are four different scenes. In Sheriff, like there aren't scenes because the gameplay is always the same. You're always in the center. You're not like in an environment. You're not in a thing that changes. You're always in the center of these like dancing banditos that are mocking you. And there's a lot of fun Nintendo touches that like they don't have the room or the time or the programming know-how, but I love the little touches like the very ugly sheriff is cute, but also like the way the banditos like disappear under their hats when you shoot them. It's like just this tiny little touch that really makes me feel like, oh, Nintendo made this game. That and the very attractive cabinet that is like a very interesting work of like in terms of design, very eye-catching in that way.
Though it's also crazy to see the release date of this is 79, and you see why these games, you know, weren't big in the U.S. and also it was few people, U.S. companies, developers making it. Because, like, this is 2 years after Star Wars. Kids don't want cowboys. They want space stuff.
That's totally true, yeah. And I guess we'd see more of these games if Westerns were still a big thing in the 70s. But I think these are a lot of people who were kids in the 50s making these games, thinking like, oh yeah, I have a lot of Western ideas in my head.
It seems like an easier pitch to get through with a Japanese developer too, since there's just so few in this list so far that were made in the U.S.
So up next is a game that is actually available on Nintendo Switch for $7.99, part of the Hamster Arcade Archives. And I know our friend Shane Bettenhausen is always tweeting about these when like Sony releases one on PS4. Mm-hmm. And whenever these games get released on Twitter, I'm like, I have never heard of this game in my life. Why are we
some deep cuts these days?
And I'm also like, why are we getting this and not like, I have a huge list. I'm like, why are we getting the Tin Star and not like, I don't know, Sunset Riders? Like, what's going on there? But yeah, the Tin Star is up next, and it is really it's the closest so far to what we recognize as like, this is a video game I could play. And
it feels like a proto Sunset Riders almost, especially with the colors.
It does, yeah. Very garish and interesting color choices. Has a lot of personality and cool ideas, and it's essentially like single screen levels. Three single screen levels that get more and more complex, and they run in a loop, and they task you with shooting all the bad guys down. And like a lot of these games so far, we still don't know how to escape this. 8-way shooting, 8-way movement with a stick and dial combo. And I'm still not comfortable with dials in video games. Like when I would go to like flea markets and I didn't know what a video game paddle was, like a little paddle, I'm like, what is this, like an electric blanket controller or something? Like, what am I turning with this?
After watching the videos for all the previous games and then seeing the title screen to Tin Star, I was like, oh my god, it felt like I'd gone forward in time like 20 years just seeing the sprite that gets its hat shot off on the title screen for this.
Yeah, they actually look like cowboys.
Yeah.
This is one of those games that is from an era where developers started to have the technical know-how and the hardware available to be more ambitious with what they were creating, and really wanted to get like a third dimensional element in there. But I feel like this game, it's kind of like Congo Bongo in that it's just hard to kind of navigate this fake 3D space for me. And I have a lot of trouble with it. So like, I think it looks neat and it's probably fun if you can play it with the original arcade dial. But yeah, the Arcade Archives version was just kind of frustrating to me. It's just one of those games where they got a little bit ahead of themselves, I think, in terms of what, you know, a game experience could actually be. But there's definitely a desire to do something really ambitious and big here.
Yeah,
so I respect that.
Like Henry said, a huge jump in technology. There's lots of enemies on the screen. There's lots of things that they're doing. They're taking cover. You can destroy things in the background. Like, you can shoot an enemy out of a window. They'll fall into a water trough. Eventually, you get into stages with, like, different tiers. The final stage is, like, this barn with a second level that you can climb up to and shoot guys from there. It's really neat. And then there's, like, a bonus stage. It's essentially just a quick draw. Like, you and another guy are on a horse running past each other. You have to fire at him at the right time. So, super complex. And I want to say, like, this is not the first, like, run-and-gun arcade game. I think that's Berserk, but it feels like it is the first of what would become things like Contra, because you are technically on a 2D plane of sorts. There is a jump button, and it is more of the, you know, 8-way fire, or at least, like, a 4-way fire that you would get in, like, Contra, and even top-down stuff like Ikari Warriors. I can't think of an earlier example of this. Jeremy, can you think of anything that's similar to this that's older? I feel like this is the first of what would become the Contras of the world.
In terms of, like, run-and-gun shooting, I mean, Elevator Action.
Is that 83?
I think that was around the same time as this. Yeah.
Okay.
So I couldn't say exactly which one came first, but this has the you know, the varied settings, the 3D perspective. They're both by Taito, so, you know, they're probably was kind of coming from the same, you know, bubbling up from the same well of inspiration, just different aspects. You have the spy over here going up and down elevators, strictly 2D. You have the cowboy over here in kind of like an immersive old Western view, kind of a diorama style.
Yeah, actually, I looked it up. Elevator Action was 83 as well. So both games pioneering that sort of gameplay by the same company in the same year.
You know, the main character looks a lot like Mario. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's a coincidence?
Ooh, I guess Mario.
Probably not.
Mario was a star at the time.
Yeah. Another thing about the graphics was it was the first time it hit me in the game. I'm like, man, you're killing a lot of people in this. Like, they're so abstract in the other ones, even though you're killing lots of people in Sheriff. For some reason, this one where I was like, man, you're really killing a lot of people here.
Sheriff. It doesn't look like you're killing people.
Mm.
It's true. You're like, they are basically aliens in that game.
Yeah, they look like invaders.
Yeah, and I guess so we had our first murder simulator. This is the first mass murder simulator.
All right, so to answer your question, Bob, it looks like Elevator Action was out by summer 83, and the 10-star was released in December 83.
Okay.
So I guess that's a little bit of chronology there. But again, these are both Taito games. So they may even have had some of the same developers. I don't know.
I would imagine, yeah. I guess I never thought of Elevator Action as one of the first run-and-gun games, but it is, for sure.
So we're seeing video game devs slowly desensitizing themselves to the idea of shooting people.
Yeah, it's like, you killed one guy.
You killed so many spies in Elevator Action. You can even crush them with an elevator instead of just gunning them down.
Oh, man, these kids are not going to turn out okay after these video games. Nope. So finally, up next, we have Badlands, a very obscure game. Like, I only discovered it when I was doing that panel about full motion video games in 2018. And so at long last, it's been so long, we finally have Anime Cowboys. And it's made by Konami back when the K in their logo was also a J. I don't know what they were thinking, but...
I think that's the K from Sunkus, isn't it?
From what?
The Sunkus logo.
The Sunkus logo?
Oh.
Sunkus. The convenience store in Japan.
Oh, okay.
Which looks like a little letter K with a boner walking around.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's
yeah.
Awkward.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's supposed to be pronounced Sunkus or Sunkusu, because it's supposed to be derived from thanks.
Okay. I think it's pronounced Suncoast.
That's okay.
So despite what this looks like, and I think I even gave out false information at that panel, so apologies. I hope you didn't tell anybody this, but it is not a light gun game. It's basically a Dragon's Lair game, but with one button, one giant red button. It's basically 14 minutes of anime footage, not of an existing anime like Cliffhanger was, but it's own proprietary anime in which you're playing as a cowboy. There's a bit of a story about how your wife and child were murdered for no reason, is what the main character says. It's a bit disorienting in that you're watching footage, but you're seeing your character from his perspective, but you also see him like doing things from a third person perspective. So this figures into the gameplay where you have to smash that red button when you want to kill the enemy at the right time. But if you see your character on the screen and smash the red button, you're shooting yourself. So it's weird.
I love this so much. Like, the intro is incredible. Terrible dubbing, which I just adds to the charm. And if there's ever a fictional portrayal of me in a movie, I think this should be playing on the TV in the background.
Really cool. Again, they're all drawing from the same. Morricone, is it the guy's name who just passed away? They're all drawing from his stuff. And this the music in this definitely is.
It goes to weird places. Like there's like a dinosaur. There's a cyclops monster. Like what's going on?
Yeah,
here?
Like you not only fight other cowboys, you fight a rock monster, a swamp creature, dinosaur. Sorry, Henry.
Yeah, no, I want to say thank you for bringing this into my life, Bob, because I love every... I watched this on my morning walk today and was just... I had to walk around a parking lot because I was like, I can't walk into traffic and miss while missing any bit of this. But like... The animation is just so great. I love the designs of it. I love every character in it. I love that for no explained reason, mystical elements show up in it. And I also really think that it's it made me think while watching it, wow, it's really stressful to be a cowboy. You have to have a hair trigger at all times.
You're walking through a cave and this rock monster starts forming. What do you do?
Just the hypertension of being a cowboy walking into a bar of like, do I have to pull my gun at any time? What if the saloon owner is going to shoot me? Then I'm going to look pretty stupid if I don't shoot him first.
Well, that's why I love any videos that show all the possible paths you can take in a Dragon Slayer type game, because it's just a death reel basically.
Oh yeah, obviously this is right after Dragon Slayer was a huge hit, so a lot of companies are cashing in on this. Even Konami at the time is making their own Dragon Slayer like game.
You could actually only shoot a dog or a nun or a kid, like, or one of my favorites is, oh no, it's a scorpion on a cactus. Kablam! Cactus and scorpion just gone.
That poor cactus. I've never played this. I've never seen this. It's not quite as good of an animation in terms of how it looks. Like it's not a Dragon's Lair, Don Bluth. It's not even like a really good anime FMV game is something called Road Blaster or Road Avenger, in that it's a driving full motion video game, and it's all 2D animation, like done from the camera's perspective. So a lot of work went into that. That's gorgeous. Look that up, and I featured that at that panel as well. A very odd game. Again, not a light gun game. You're just stopping the thing when there's no whammies on the screen or when you want to shoot something to death.
I also have a really wild guess about this, but I think I'm right, is that I think the animation is done by Toei, the same folks who were doing Marvel Productions in 1983-84 as well. Like, especially when the dog runs across the screen, it looks just like Miss Lion from Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends.
Okay.
And just the style and movement to all of it looks so much like the Spider-Man and G.I. Joe cartoons that Toei was animating at this exact same time.
I couldn't find animation credits, but you might be right about that. And
I so much the feel.
The animation is surprising. Really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd say it's on par with like a good TV production of the time, and this is like bubble economy Japan, so it's much better than you would expect.
Yeah, it's not like 8 minutes of original Don Bluth animation like in Dragon's Lair, but it's pretty good.
Yeah, I recommend just look up Badlands 1984, say Konami, because there are other games called Badlands, and they're different.
And the logo is shooting the hat until it disappears and turns into the Konami logo. I love that.
It's not super quote unquote anime, but when you do die, there are these like little chibi scenes of like you being carried away on a stretcher by these two people with like wacky sound effects.
Love
so
those.
I do like that. But yeah, Badlands, I bet no one out there has ever played it. And if you have, let me know.
In 15 seconds, what is Nice Games Club?
It's our game dev podcast. Steven, help!
Game mechanics, accessibility, art and animation, level design, prototyping.
Everything that goes into making video games. How's that, Mark?
Nice. Listen to Nice Games Club wherever you get your podcasts or at nicegames.club.
Welcome to Casual Magic, the show where we explore the fun side of Magic the Gathering. I'm your host, Shivam Putt, and each week we delve into everything from casual format to explorations of creatures and card types to interviews with designers of the game. At Casual Magic, we believe that it just isn't magic without the gathering. Come along and play!
Hi, I'm Ray, and this is my friend Alex.
Hi!
And we do a show called No More Whoppers.
Some call it corn, we call it therapy.
We're adults with the virility of men.
Want to hear us read snack food copy and talk about Japanese chips? Too bad!
Join us every month or so on the Greenlit Podcast Network.
The award-winning Go Nintendo podcast covers the latest Nintendo news while also diving into what's hot in pop culture, music trivia, hands-on impressions, and so much more. Hopefully we can make you laugh, too. You'll find new episodes of the Go Nintendo podcast on the Greenlit Podcast Network every single week.
So up next, we have Bank Panic. That sounds like something we just had not too long ago in this country. Bank Panic. It's another cowboy game that feels like it should be a light gun game. Like, I went into this assuming these are all light gun games for the most part. This is not. It's pretty interesting, the design of this. This is made by Sega, in that you play a murderous banker, and you work at a bank with 12 different doors. And at the top of the screen, there is this little like graph showing like when people are approaching the doors. You essentially move the camera around so you see three doors at a time, and you have three buttons in front of you that symbolize each of those doors. Sometimes it'll be someone showing up to, you know, deposit money. Sometimes it'll be a little kid showing up, you shoot the hat out of his hand. Sometimes it'll be a villain showing up that you murder, or a hostage in front of a villain that shows up that you have to wait for the hostage to duck out of the way, then you murder the villain.
So the typical bank experience.
Exactly. You go into your bank with 12 doors, and you hope the banker doesn't shoot you in the head.
That's why I'm glad online banking is a thing now.
Exactly. That's why I'm going to join a credit union. But yeah, it's very interesting gameplay. Again, not a light gun game, but I feel like it's borrowing from Tapper, in that you have queues of people approaching you, and you have to figure out the best way to deal with them while multitasking between different hostile and non-hostile targets.
Oh, I got it with four sets of three doors. Maybe it's that it's just a box and each side is three doors. So you're just facing different walls each time.
Who is building this bank with 12 doors?
My biggest question is about the little kid who comes with the target to the bank, of just like, ooh, he's going to shoot my target. Oh boy.
It is really neat. I've never seen this in the arcade. Yet another game I've never seen in the arcade in this list, but there is a port for the Master System. I don't know how well that works given that the system does not have three action buttons on it. So that's the only home port I think to date any of these games have had so far. I don't think any of them have come home in a home console version yet.
It was actually ported to the SG-1000 system in Japan before Master System.
That sounds like it can't be good.
I actually have that version, which I mainly got because I could swear the cover artwork is done by Susumu Matsushita, the Famitsu guy. Like, I can't find any credit or proof that it's him, but the characters look so much like his art, especially There's a woman in a pink dress, like holding, you know, she's kind of like holding a bag of money and has her hand on her face with a look of horror. And she just has that like elongated kind of rubbery look that Matsushita's characters always have. And it really, like, I just want to know, did he do Sega artwork before he started doing Famitsu? It really, like, I have nothing to say about the game itself, but the artwork has been an object of fascination for me for a few years.
If you look at the cover art also, you can see, like, I couldn't really parse what the game setting is exactly until I saw the cover art, and it just shows where the doors are and where you are supposed to be standing, supposedly. And actually, the artwork in the game itself is really cool and stylized, too. I like it.
Yeah, it's right before our next game, which features, like, very big detailed sprites of, like, cowboys and Western figures. So let's talk about that one. We are now at the baby's toy Marty McFly was good at. Wild Gunman. I almost said Back to the Future 2. That's a future podcast. So 1984 Nintendo. So this is a very famous scene in that movie that is setting up a scene later in the next movie where he does that at a Old West target range. But in that movie, there's a few mistakes with that game, and I watched Jeremy's video and I forgot about these. Jeremy, you pointed out in your video, Marty McFly shouldn't know about Wild Gunman unless he was either importing Famicom games or he somehow got an NES in its first week of release.
Right. The NES was only released in New York City that first week, and he is a kid in California. So that's, I'm very impressed with his video gaming acumen. So either he had like someone fly from New York to bring him a brand new video game system, or he was like way up on the import scene. I don't know which.
I think it was Doc Brown, like, Marty, you got to try this Famicom game, Marty.
Plug it into my giant speaker, Marty. It's amazing.
Yeah, he's clearly a tech guy, so sure, he imported it, yeah.
And one thing I know, so like when the Marty McFly Ghost of the Future date happened, I was writing for US Gamer, and I was writing an article about this, and I watched that scene again, and I was like, oh, the scene in the movie is not the actual gameplay footage of Wild Gunman, it's ILM doing a CGI mock-up of the game using the game's graphics, because... in the arcade that he plays, he needs to shoot a bunch of guys on the screen because that will echo a scene that happens in the future in the next movie. Wild Gunman does not play like that. And if you watch the movie clip again, you'll see like, oh, things are moving much smoother than they ever moved in the NES game. So go back and watch it. You can definitely see like, oh, it's very subtle CG, early CGI that's moving around these Wild Gunman graphics.
Yeah, this is like super Wild Gunman, basically.
We never saw that.
I like that Robert Zemeckis is like, he doesn't let the game tell him what his story's going to be. He's like, no, we'll change the game to fit that scene in the past where he's going to shoot three people at a... Or no, it's a carnival game. He shoots three at a carnival game.
Like super fast, too. Mm-hmm. This is one of the first video game remakes I could find, and it's like remaking it in a different medium too. So this is looking back 10 years on 1974's Wild Gunman in a video version of it. And Jeremy, through your videos, I also discovered that Urban Champion is a remake of a Game & Watch game, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Can you think of any other remakes that are of this kind of vintage, or are these like some of the first ones? Oh, sorry.
It was Duck Hunt.
Oh, Duck Hunt as well. So, like, Nintendo was the only company doing this.
So, there probably are other examples. You know, Sega did a lot of electromechanical arcade machines in the late 60s and early 70s, things like Submarine. And I feel like there are probably examples of those that they turned into video games. But I've researched the early NES stuff, so I can speak definitively about that. I can't speak about Sega, but I don't want to discount the possibility that, you know, companies like Namco, Taito, Sega that worked in, you know, or even Midway that, you know, had pinball games and stuff. I don't want to discount the possibility that they also did this sort of thing. But, you know, this is one that has a much greater legacy just because of how closely tied it is to the launch of the NES in America, the importance of the Zapper light gun in the NES's success here in the U.S., so, you know, just in terms of legacy, this is definitely one of the big ones.
Yeah, and I have never played this, actually, but I was watching gameplay videos, so it's super, super rudimentary light gun gaming, like even less complex than something like Duck Hunt. You are basically, an enemy will creep onto the screen, and they're very large, like Punch-Out style, huge sprites of these Western figures, and essentially you wait for their eyes to flash, and then you have to shoot them before they shoot you. So that's one of the modes. And the second mode is called B mode, in which there are two opponents at once, and often one of them won't even shoot at you. So it's like sort of like multitasking and prioritizing different targets, one of which cannot be hostile.
Yeah, I don't think the enemies in this game are sprite based. Like, I think their eyes that flash are sprites, but I think you're actually seeing background objects being moved around. Keep in mind, this was a very early NES cartridge.
That's right.
So it didn't have bank switching. It had very little memory available. There's no flicker in the characters, and given the size of these characters, when you have two of them side by side on screen, the NES could only display eight by eight sprites in a line before they started to, you know, flicker and have to you know, alternate and cycle between frames. So yeah, a big reason this is so kind of stilted and simple is because, unlike Duck Hunt, where you had actual duck sprites moving kind of freely around as objects, these are just like the backgrounds being shuffled in and being changed around to be interactive. So it does really limit what you can do. And just like the original arcade, you know, the standalone Wild Gunman from the 70s, in mode A, it doesn't matter where you're shooting, just as long as you're shooting in time to outshoot, you know, the opponent you take on. And there, you know, there are different characters you have to face. There's some, you know, very kind of racist looking Mexican gunners and big guys like with big bushy mustaches and that sort of thing. And each of them has kind of like their own different difficulty level. Like there's a black hat guy who is extremely very quick on the draw, so he's really hard to beat, whereas there's other characters that don't take as long to pull their guns, so you have to be more mindful, especially in the mode where there are two guys on screen at once, because one of them is, you know, one of them may not pull a gun at all, but one of them is probably going to be faster than the other in pulling the weapon.
Yeah, and there's a third mode in that it's just like basically a shooting gallery.
Yep.
So nothing that complex. There's some nice Nintendo touches in that the enemies, there's not very many types of enemies, but they all die in like a humorous way, quote unquote humorous way. Like one of them just gets his hat shot off. The other two die in the dirt.
I love those character models, and they also come back in the with the Duck Hunt character in Smash Brothers. I think they get a lot of fun out of
him. Oh, you're right. Yeah. I totally forgot about that.
I wish we'd have bought this game because my family loved the Duck Hunt game so much, but we didn't buy any other Zapper games as cool as they look. Like I wish we had had this.
And yeah, me too. I love Duck Hunt, and that was also the only light gun game I ever owned. I would have had a lot of fun with this.
And Jeremy, do you know if there was a was that another lie of Robert Zemeckis that there was a freestanding Wild Gunman cabinet? Did they make one? I know it was like a Play Choice 10 variant, but was there ever like a freestanding standalone Wild Gunman?
No, as far as I'm aware, I don't think there was a there were a lot of versus games based on NES titles. They were like expanded, but Wild Gunman never had a standalone.
Yeah, I know Duck Hunt definitely did. I played that in the arcade, but I never saw Wild Gunman in my life. Next game is a Capcom classic, not Gun Smoke, but Gun Smoke. Yes, it's different than the very popular TV series of the same name. That period is very significant. That will prevent any lawsuit from happening. But this is the most flagrant copyright infringement skirting thing I've ever seen in a video game. Like,
it's a great tradition with this genre because there was a movie in the 50s called The Tin Star.
Ooh,
that I think might have had John Wayne in it. So clearly Taito was just going right for it, saying, "The hell with you, John Wayne. You don't scare me. I'm stealing your movie title."
So yeah, what I find most flagrant is like they stick that period in to taunt the authorities. It's like the serial killer writing letters to the police. It's like, you try to sue us. We put this dot in here.
I think the arcade version doesn't have that. Isn't that something they added for the NES port?
I'm not sure. Maybe in Japan that's the case, but I think for America they did sneak that that period in just to be safe.
That's how. I mean, this is right after the Donkey Kong lawsuit with Universal, right? So maybe that's why Capcom would take even the slightest precaution with protecting themselves from a lawsuit. There,
this game is Gradius has arrived on the scene. A year prior, Capcom, May 1942. And this game is developed by the exact same dude, Yoshiki Okamoto, a big Capcom guy behind things like 1942, Sansan, lots of other great Capcom hits he'd be a producer on. And Gunsmoke is a cowboy shmup. And basically another, like all these games have weird control schemes that we have not like found a satisfying control scheme yet, in that you have a control stick and then three buttons to fire. One fires up, one fires left, and one fires right. So you can use different combinations of those buttons to fire in different directions, and that's why the home port is kind of awkward, because you can't really do that with a A and B button controller.
You know, I'm low-key into top-down shooters, not so much games where you're a ship shooting missiles, but more so something like this where you're just a guy shooting guns with infinite ammo.
And you walk at the same pace, too. Like, you're not slowing down ever.
Yeah, this is like this is definitely a shmup because it's auto-scrolling. Like, you're not the one controlling the scrolling of the screen. You're just moving around as the screen scrolls. And in the game, and so the arcade game is a bit different than the NES game. In the arcade game, you are essentially upgrading three different elements of your cowboy: speed, range, and rate of fire, by destroying barrels in the world and picking up different items. And you can also get a horse to ride on to take a few more hits. That's what horses are good for, just absorbing bullets. And in the NES game, we have finally reached the era in which Capcom is not farming out their ports to Micronics. This is not a Micronics port. Is that correct, Jeremy? I know you might be the authority.
The last Micronics Capcom game, I think, was Ghosts and Goblins, actually. They only did a few. And then Capcom took over and said, hey, let's make our games actually better on NES than they were in the arcade.
I didn't even have to check, because as soon as I started a video of the NES version, I'm like, this was not made by Micronics. Like, there's an intro.
At 20 frames a second. Yeah, it must be. So this game was actually released in arcades about half a year after Commando. And I really feel like this is the next Commando game, like, not in terms of, you know, the franchise, but basically taking those ideas and iterating them and adding more complexity, adding more sophistication, giving players more control, more options, more things to collect, more ways to improve their powers. So there is a real continuity of design happening. And that was also, I believe, that was a Tokuro Fujiwara game. So maybe you've kind of got this, like, dueling creators thing happening at Capcom. Fujiwara was like, I'm going to make a top-down shooter. And Okamoto was like, I'm going to make a better top-down shooter. And everyone wins because the games just got better.
Yeah, and the NES version of this, I think most people will be familiar with. It's a bit different in that, like Bionic Commando before it, they try to do a few more things differently, though not as drastically as Bionic Commando, in that they beef it up a little bit more. There's a story with a cutscene that set up the game, and there's also an economy in the game. Instead of just picking up power-ups on the map, you are picking up money that you use to buy power-ups with. So they're trying to make it a little more in-depth in the arcade game, but you're buying this for the arcade game experience. And there's a bit of a little wrinkle in this, in that in the arcade game, like, once you reach the end of the level, you fight a boss. In this game, you have to find the hidden wanted poster by shooting in the right direction. And once you pick it up, you can then fight the boss. If not, the level loops infinitely. So you have to find this wanted poster in every level to actually see the boss. So they're trying to figure out ways to make this a more in-depth experience, but it's still like a 20-minute game.
This is the most outlaw rich town of any game so far. Like, there has to be 700 bad dudes who live in this town and want to kill you.
It's almost as if there's like a zombie virus that, like, have all their guns trained on you. It's corrupted all of their minds. But
that's why you need the infinite ammo.
That's right. Yeah, there. Smith & Wesson made a lot of money off of this guy.
So yeah, Gun.Smoke, so most people have forgotten about it. It was kind of fun NES game, but it is the spiritual predecessor to one of the most popular franchises on the planet right now, Red Dead Revolver, because Red Dead Revolver started at Capcom when Okamoto wanted to make a new Western game in the spirit of Gunsmoke. So that is the root of Red Dead Revolver, which would become Red Dead Redemption 1 and 2. And originally, this was known as SWAT, Spaghetti Western Action Team.
Oh, so cool.
With like fantasy and sci-fi elements, but I guess Capcom and the development studio weren't really getting along in terms of what they wanted from each other. So this eventually became Red Dead Revolver, and again, which would become Red Dead Redemption 1 and 2. But there's a huge polygon cover story behind this, and just knowing that Capcom could have had Red Dead Redemption, they're probably kicking themselves every day.
Well, Capcom,
a fascinating story. I never knew about it.
Yeah, the Red Dead Redemption exists how it does because of Rockstar wanting that type of game. Capcom would never have wanted that type of game. It's not, they could have made a game that's, you know, also very good, but it never, they didn't want to make that kind of Western game. It also came at that weird time where Capcom was like, how do we make a game for America? How about this?
I think the story goes that, like, Rockstar published that Angel Studios game as Red Dead Revolver, and then they're like, we'll make Red Dead Redemption ourselves.
Thank you for your work. Just head out the door. We'll keep all those copyrights. Thank you.
You have been fired. But but yeah, it's so interesting. The story is called How the Red Dead Franchise Began. And again, it all started with Okamoto, a Capcom bigwig, saying, let's do Gunsmoke again.
I wanted to talk about the cover art. I know I keep bringing up the cover art for these games, but I'm an artist, so I can't help myself. I'm sorry. When I went to Portland Retro Gaming Expo in 2013, where I could have met Bob 5 years sooner, but fate prevented that from happening because I missed the Retronauts panel. But hey, we were both dating someone else at the time. And the guy I was dating, well, we both collected retro games together. So when I went there, I bought a bunch of games, including Gunsmoke. And then I Skyped my boyfriend at the time, and he said, oh, I bought some games too. And it turned out we had both bought Gunsmoke for the NES. And we were talking about it, and I said, oh, I love the cover and how it looks like it's colored with pencil crayons. And he was like, what? It looks like a painting to me. I think it's pretty cool. And it was like a classical comedy of errors where we had no idea what the other person was talking about. Until we found out there were two different covers for Gunsmoke, and I had the shoddy one, which is apparently more rare. And I tried finding out online to see why there's two different covers for this, but I can't find an answer.
Yeah, you have, like, it's not quite as subpar as the bad Mega Man, but it does remind me of that for some reason.
It's more competently drawn.
Yeah. The other one is, like, looks like a movie poster, like the better one.
It's really cool.
Yeah,
I like that one better.
Yeah, why was there two versions? I guess maybe they're like, this art isn't very good. It looks like an eighth grader won a poster contest or something.
Yeah, but when we broke up and we had to divide our retro game collection, I took the Gunsmoke that I bought with this shoddy cover.
It has that, again, I can't help but think of Mega Man, that Mega Man cover, because it has like the little square of artwork framed by like the sideways like Tron grid overlapping other.
He's even wearing blue and yellow, just like Mega Man in the bad art Mega Man version.
And he's pointing his guns at you.
The anatomy is way better, though.
And he's got like this weird kind of squat, bow-legged stance, just like Mega Man on Mega Man 1's cover. Yeah, this is like the Old West version of Mega Man, Mega Man 1.
Bad the better version of the cover art, that's probably ripped off of something else.
Yeah.
Bad box art Mega Man is, he at least respects you enough not to point a gun at your face.
It's more at your crotch.
Yeah.
It's always fun to look up the arcade flyers, especially the Japanese ones for all of these games. They have like really glorious art. I believe this is the Japanese flyer for Gunsmoke, the arcade game. It is a cool picture of just like a guy with his guns in the air, and there's like cowboys and Indians and all kinds of Western whatnot. And the text overlaid across the cowboy is "Rain of bullets with the death delivering guns." I do like
awesome. That. I want that. That's a game worth at least 25 cents to me.
I totally agree with you. So yeah,
I'll take the death delivering guns.
I'll take yes.
The other kind.
So up next we have a game that Nina has played, Law of the West. This is an Accolade game for came out in 1985. There's a Famicom version of it that was never localized for the US, but this is mainly like a computer game, and it's the first one of these that is not an arcade style shooter. It is an adventure game with light action elements. Nina, can you talk more about this one?
Yeah, we had this at our house growing up for the Commodore 64. And I absolutely love this game. And it's one of the few games my older brother and sister and I all play together. Because it's so fun picking dialogue. Because it's just a giant dialogue puzzle game. So you could just like say different things. You could be a mean cowboy. You could be a good cowboy. And just see what happens and see how the people respond to you. And this might actually be the catalyst to my love of hokey Westerns. Because it was my first exposure to Western stuff. And we weren't very good at the game. But I don't think we ever beat it. And like you mentioned, it was ported to the Famicom, even though it was never ported to the NES. I do own the Famicom version, a box copy of it, and it's one of my favorite things in my retro collection. It's got a cool brown cartridge.
Oh, man,
and
I
was actually working on a translation for it for a friend of mine who made repro carts, but I just got too busy and the project kind of died.
The video of the gameplay is really interesting, how it's just always behind the back of the guy.
Yeah, you're staring at cowboy butt the whole time.
Yeah, it's like that Bruce Springsteen cover perspective.
Yeah.
Just zoomed in on his butt.
You're supposed to be looking at the gun, you guys. Come on.
You can shoot a child in this game.
Yeah, it's like there's a lot. Again, it's like mainly like
you
dialogue.
Too.
It's mainly a dialogue puzzle game, and I think I read somewhere. Again, it's hard to determine this as a fact, but somebody credited this as the first like game with dialogue trees in it.
I can believe that.
In 1985,
you can just like pull out your gun at any point and shoot the person you're talking to whenever you want.
How to clean up the town? Well, if I killed everybody in it, that would clean it up.
If I was the only person here, it'd be very manageable.
I don't think you can get through the game with by being a pacifist, though. There's no pacifist run of the game, if I remember correctly. There are times where the bad guy will pull his gun on you, and you have to be faster than him.
Yeah, I was watching a video, and often you can like talk them down from shooting, but often you sometimes you have to like shoot them down in the street.
Sometimes you gotta slap leather, as they say.
Is that how that goes?
Yeah, slap leather. That means you know, your holster's leather. So you slap it, you go boom, wham. That's a term I've learned from all the cowboy books I've read.
I didn't read enough cowboy slang before this podcast, but yeah, Law of the West, really cool adventure game. If you enjoy staring at a butt and shooting children, I guess.
Howdy, do I ever?
So yeah, Law of the West, really cool again. But it's like the one standout in this, and then it's not an arcade style game. Up next we have this is our penultimate game in this podcast. This is going to be a two-parter because we are like maybe a quarter of the way, we're about halfway through my notes, and we can easily do a lot more. So this is going to be the we're going to cut this off as soon as we get to our next game, and there's going to be a part two. So up next is a very rare NES game that I have never heard of and never played, but when I found out about this and read about it, I'm like, I gotta play this. It's called Cowboy Kid. It came out in 1991, published by Romstar in a very short supply. And it turns out it is a pretty neat Western clone of one of the NES Goemon games. And the second I saw a video of this, I'm like, this plays just like your Legend of the Mystical Ninjas of the world. Like, in that there are town segments with all kinds of like mini games and shops and dialogue. And then there are 2D segments, and it's all very comical and whatnot.
Yeah, for me, this is the one that got away. Because I had a chance to buy this at a local used game store for $50.
Oh my god.
And it was a little too rich for my blood, so like after like agonizing over it for a few minutes, I passed on it, but I should have bought it because I've never been able to find it since. And you said in your notes that it's like $600 on eBay now.
I mean, that's the one copy I found on eBay box, so who knows what the inflation is on that.
Oh, it's boxed.
Yeah.
Well, I can understand that. Yeah, I should have bought it then. Man, like I like the early Goemon games too, so it's definitely up my alley. And honestly, I don't play my retro games much anymore, but it would just be a cool addition to my collection of cowboy games. And also, I know I keep seeing this. Check out the cover art. It's hilarious. There's like a Tom Selleck-looking cowboy.
Yeah, it's very much like there's like a very stern-looking Native American man and a cowboy next to each other. But then you look at the Japanese art. It's called Western Kids is the name of that game. And it's just like a bunch of super adorable, cute little cowboy and Native American characters like in like a pioneer wagon and stuff. It's such a different look. But the graphics of the game itself are super cutesy.
The cover art for the U.S. is like, I expect these guys to start singing YMCA at any moment. You'll be happy to know that the cartridge is currently selling for about $300 as opposed to $6. So much more reasonable.
Why didn't I buy it? It's only $50. $50 Canadian.
Oh, that's nothing.
Now knowing its ninja roots, it makes sense why you're stabbing people so much at the start of the game. You're a knight. You brought a knife to a gunfight.
Exactly.
In the game, yeah.
You just like walk around stabbing people in the beginning, just like Goemon's little pipe or whatever. Yeah. Or does he have a pipe? Or is that Ibisumaru? One of them starts with like a little pipe. Yeah, but yeah, I was reading Hardcore Gaming 101's article about this, and this is all just purely conjecture, but their theory was that the studio Pixel, which is a very little-known Japanese game studio, they converted Gambari Goemon 2 for a Western audience. Like, we kind of, like, changed it, and they were hired to do this, but then Konami's like, we're going to pass on this, and they allowed Pixel to shop it around to other publishers. So that is the theory, and Hardcore Gaming 101 says, like, it is too similar to Gambari Goemon 2, and also it shares some of the same staff. So it is presumed that this was going to be a localized version that Konami passed on, but still allowed Pixel to shop it around to other publishers, rather, in order to sell it in the West. And it didn't really sell in the West. I have never seen this game as like a rental even, and I probably would have passed on it because of that dorky cover.
The cover really doesn't sell how charming the graphics are. It's a shame.
Yeah, and if you've never played, I mean, like, they didn't bring over any of the Goemon games in our childhood and the 90s outside of Legend of the Mystical Ninja, and there are, like, at least five other ones of those for Super Famicom and Famicom, so this is sort of like one of those, and those are all a blast, and they're all fan-translated, and this one did come out in English, and the localization of this one, or I guess it is a localization, it's very charming. It has a lot of the cowboy dialogue we've been trying to talk about in this podcast. So, you're only going to be able to emulate this. No one's going to put this on Digital Marketplace. You're not going to buy this for $600, so just check it out. It looks very neat and very charming, and if you like Goemon, it's kind of like that.
By the way, Bob, in your notes, you wrote Legend of the Mystical Nina.
That's exactly.
So I think you had Nina on your brain when you're writing this.
I did.
Honestly, I was looking at that and wondering...
I will say Nina is a ninja, and she sneaks up on me all the time.
Because it's not like
she's
I'm
so
trying
small.
To.
No, no, but I'll
more aware of your surroundings.
I'll just turn around and suddenly you'll be in front of me. It's terrifying.
That bender joke, Robin.
Exactly.
Bell on me.
So our final game of this podcast, we're only at 1991 and we have like so many other games to talk about. So yeah, two-parter at the very least, but we saved the best for last for the first parter at least. And we're talking about Sunset Riders. Nina, you definitely wanted to talk about this. And you were part of Fangamer, a recent Fangamer campaign of merchandise. There was an old Western commercial that was playing a lot at the booth when I was working there. Please talk about like what you did for Sunset Riders.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite games of all time. And if I could have any arcade cabinet, you would think it'd be the Simpsons arcade game. Wrong. I would get Sunset Riders.
Wow.
Because the gameplay, the colors, the music, everything is just so memorable and so fun. And when Fangamer partnered up with Konami and we were brainstorming stuff, I said, please ask them if we can make Sunset Riders merch, please. Because I don't think there's ever been Sunset Riders merchandise aside from the soundtrack being released once on a CD, I believe. Only in Japan, though. So Fangamer is based in Tucson, Arizona. And that's also the home of Old Tucson Studios. And it's like this old Western town that's been used in a ton of films. Just look it up on Wikipedia. You can find a huge list of Western stuff that was shot there.
I think Bill and Ted might have shot there.
I looked it up. Bill and Ted was shot in Arizona, but they didn't go to Old Tucson Studios. Aww. I was wondering that myself, though, when I saw the movie. They did Rio Bravo, which is like a John Wayne film.
Oh, that's
they
a classic.
They also did El Dorado.
Yeah.
And so we thought, hey, let's make a Sunset Riders movie to advertise our merchandise. So we rented the studio for a whole day. And I was there just doing general assistance stuff and helping take videos and photos to document the whole thing. And it was amazing. Like there were fun, there were fake gunshots and stuntmen falling off buildings. So it was basically like I was at a Wild West film shoot. I would say it's one of the best experiences of my life.
Wow.
And it's called Bury Me With My Money and Sunset Riders Western. So look that up on YouTube. It's also on the Fangamer site, actually. And the CEO of Fangamer, my boss, Reed, he played all of the playable characters, except for Cormato, of course. But since three out of the four playable characters are just all like basically all like the same guy almost, he played all of them.
Oh, man.
And for this, I designed a shirt and two bandanas, and another designer, Tony, he designed a pen and a leather wallet that says, "Bury Me With My Money."
Perfect.
I got to get that wallet. I kind of really want that wallet.
Yes, please do. We worked so hard on it, and we knew it was like a very niche product, but that's like the one thing we wanted. Like if we could have picked one thing to make for Sunset Riders, that was it, and we achieved it.
Yeah, this game developed by Konami, I want to say at the height of their arcade power, at least in my childhood, because like this was them putting out some of the best and flashiest and just coolest four-player arcade games. So 91 had this, Simpsons and Turtles in Time, and I'm sure there's other ones that I'm forgetting, but
greatest.
Like just gorgeous looking games, and this game is so pretty. And what I love about this game, watching a Let's Play of it again, and actually this is available on Switch, I believe, as a digital release. You can play it there. But just the odd color choices, the pinks, the purples, the yellows, like these very bright and bold colors are things you're not used to seeing in a Western, but they make this game so interesting to look at.
No. And the voice acting is great too.
Oh God, yeah, no,
so hokey.
this is easily my favorite game I played as a kid on this list of games we've done. Like I mostly would only play the Konami beat 'em ups if they starred a character I liked from television, but this was the one. Like I played Double Dragon and Streets of Rage, but the only other non tie-in adaptation one of these beat 'em ups I played was Sunset Riders, because it was just, I think to me as a kid, it was the colors. Like I just stop walking through my Florida arcade the second I see the colors on the characters and just all this like gunplay action that was going on. It was so cool. And my brother was super into it too. We did a lot of two-player gameplays of Sunset Riders for sure.
It's It's fun, and the attract mode is really cool too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just apparently
seeing, like, close-ups of all the characters. Who did you play as, by the way?
The yellow-shirted white guy, I think. Yeah.
I always played as the guy in the pink poncho.
Yes, Cremano.
Yeah,
I think he's a lot of people's favorites.
Mm.
But yeah, the game was directed by the same guy who directed Super C, the sequel to Contra, and that's it doesn't have quite the same variety of weaponry. But I think what this game does best is like just give you a bunch of different environments and different types of like environmental challenges. And of course, just like in like Ninja Turtles, you do have a like you're a riding something level instead of skateboards or whatever. You're on horseback, but it's a cool mix of like brawler and shooter at the same time, and I think it works very, very well. And it's a very beautiful looking game, and again available on Switch if you want to play it.
I love that startup animation too of a character like the blonde guy drinking a whole bottle of whiskey and then throwing it down and getting into a shootout.
He's got all kinds of problems.
There's some like fun touches in here, like the horny show. You know, some Japanese games would have like just like a fun cheesecakey show for a little something for the guys kind of thing, which you would often take out when they brought it over here. Like there's a little show with the dancers you can watch, and it adds nothing to the gameplay.
And they smooch
or the story
you.
Even
they smooch you at the end, right? Yeah, I think
when you're playing the game, you can enter a building and be emerge full of health and smooches.
Oh, ooh. Nice! Sort of like Link to the Past. Or sorry, no, Zelda 2 rather. But yeah, this game so cool and lots of fun boss characters with voice dialogues. I guess we didn't really talk about like cultural insensitivity in these games, and of course there's a lot of them, especially with like Native American characters. And unfortunately this game has a character named Chief Scalpum that was eventually even in 1993 people were becoming more sensitive about these things. So for the home versions, Chief Scalpum was turned into Chief Wigwam. Not the best change, but
better.
It is a better change. And I will say, even in the arcade version there is some degree of like sensitivity there, because he is the boss character that you don't murder. Like before you kill him, his like sister runs on the screen and says, no, don't kill him, he was only following orders. So for some reason they were at least sensitive enough to be like, it'd be kind of weird if you just murdered this Native American man in his own territory here.
Yeah, but that
I always like that moment.
I really have a lot of trouble kind of getting over when it comes to Western, just like the genres. It's basically like they kind of treat Native Americans the same way that first-person shooters today treat Muslims. Like, they're just usually treated as fodder and not as actual characters. And it, I don't know, it bothers me. It's tough to get past.
Yeah, I think like there are games that do this a lot more with terms of like Native, like Gunsmoke. I don't think we talked about that. There's a lot of that in that game. But it was just considered like, oh yeah, cowboys and Indians, the eternal struggle. Of course, some of these are humans and some aren't, according to, you know, old ideas.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
in more modern games, they do try to avoid that though, and there are some sections in the modern stuff where you play as an indigenous person taking down cowboys.
Yeah. Or you meet a friendly one who tells you like, no, there's not going to be a whole defend yourself against the hordes level in those. But yeah, I mean, by even the early 90s, people were talking about like, oh, this was bad. The cowboys and Indian games we all played, that was a mistake and also ahistorical.
Yeah, like even Back to the Future 3, that's paying homage to all the great Westerns. It's like, there's still some sketchy stuff in there. Like the second Marty McFly arrives in the Old West, he's immediately pursued by Native Americans. Or like, you know, like that's the scene he runs into at the drive-in that becomes reality. So I know they're paying homage to classic Westerns, but unfortunately, especially if you're in another culture, these things that are like iconography for a genre could be problematic and you might not know it if you're not steeped in the history of those things.
I'm glad they at least tried to have a more sensitive portrayal in the modern stuff. Although the game Gun does not do a good job with that at all.
Oh, no, it does not. I totally forgot
game.
The game.
And I confuse Gun with Red Dead Revolver all the time because it came out at the exact same time for like the same consoles.
Red Dead Revolver is way better.
Mm. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that is the end of our part one of Cowboy Games.
Download Sunset Riders on my Switch now.
Yeah.
This has sold me on this.
I think so far the ones we talked about, the Tin Star and Sunset Riders, are the only ones available for download. I don't think Gunsmoke is is there like an arcade collection for Capcom that has Gunsmoke on it, Jeremy, that's like available?
You know, it might be on one of like the PSP PSP collections that are compatible with Vita, but I don't know. I can't say for
sure. Yeah, so not a lot of these are playable today, but you can find a way if you want to check them out. And we'll have a lot more talk about a lot more cowboy games in the future, because again, we were only at 1991. We covered 15 years, basically, of history, and we got a lot more to go.
It's possible to buy Wild Gunman. Yeah, Wild Gunman you can buy on Wii U Virtual Console.
Oh, sign me up.
So that is one other game that is out there.
Okay.
It was in the Capcom Arcade Cabinet collection that was on the PS3 and 360. Gunsmoke was.
Okay. So nothing, I guess, no modern console yet.
Yeah.
Probably backward compatible with Xbox One is my guess.
Most things are. Yeah. I got to give it to old Microsoft on that.
Got to do something with that console. But yes, thanks for joining us again. There'll be another one of these. I had a lot of fun going through all this stuff, and Nina, of course, will be back to talk about more of these games. But yes, thank you for listening to Retronauts, of course. You can find us online at Retronauts, and of course we are supported by Patreon, all of our great patrons out there. If you want to support the show and get all these episodes 1 week at a time and ad free, please go to patreon.com/retronauts and sign up for the $3 level. If you do, you'll get that, but if you want to hear even more podcasts, you sign up at the $5 level, you'll get just that and 2 exclusive podcasts every month that aren't available to patrons. Right now we are in the month of August, and we started doing exclusive episodes in January. So if you sign up at the $5 level now at patreon.com/retronauts, you'll probably get like 13 or 14 episodes that you haven't heard. And that's a lot of time to kill in these times where there's frankly too much time to kill. So if you're looking for something more to listen to, we have exclusive episodes there, and you'll get 2 a month as long as you stay a $5 patron at patreon.com/retronauts. Let's go around the fake room we're in here, and let's talk to Nina. Nina, what's going on with you? Do you have anything you want to promote where we can find you online? I know as of this release, you have a book that just came out.
Yeah, the sequel to my children's graphic novel, Sparks. Sparks Double Dog Dare came out early August, so please check that out. That's about 2 cats that dress up in a robotic dog suit to save people. And you can find me on Twitter at Space Coyote. That's Space Coyote with an L at the end instead of an E. That's Space Coyote, not Space Cowboy, as some people mistakenly call me. Although that is a cool name, too. Although I've only seen like 1 episode of Cowboy Bebop. So fangamer.com, please go there. That's where I work. Go to collection, sort by artist, click on Space Coyote. You can see all the video game merchandise I designed there. Please check out our Sunset Riders collection. Although I went to this the site just now, we only have the shirt and wallet left. The pin and bananas are sold out, but the rest of the stuff is half off. So you can get the wallet for $20.
All right.
Actually, $19. Well, that's a great deal.
This will go live in, I think, more than a month, so who knows how much will be left in the stock.
There's only 1 of the shirt left. It's a women's 4X.
I'm moving fast on that wallet right now.
Yeah, please do. And please watch the Bury Me With My Money and Sunset Riders Western film, because we worked so hard on it, and it's a lot of fun. And also, buy me Cowboy Kid or go to hell.
Ooh. You already got your wedding gift, so maybe for the recommitment ceremony, I will invite Cowboy Kid himself.
Yes.
You'll finally get to meet him.
Wait, the Tom Selleck Cowboy?
What's that?
Is he the Cowboy Kid? The Tom Selleck Cowboy?
He's much older now. He's no longer a child. Oh. Jeremy, how about you?
You can find me on Twitter as GameSpite. You can find me creating content for Limited Run Games, doing all kinds of stuff. You can find my video productions on YouTube. Look for Jeremy Parrish, Video Works, Chronologies of Game Systems. And you can listen to my other little podcast, Alexander's Ragtime Band, a monthly show about progressive rock. You hate it. We love it. Let's find common ground in the middle.
Henry, how about you?
Hey, follow me, Henry Gilbert, on Twitter at HENEREYG. Also, me and Bob do our own podcast together, Talking Simpsons and What a Cartoon, where we cover every episode of The Simpsons in chronological order. And on What a Cartoon, we cover a different animated series once a week. If you wanted to hear all that stuff I heard about Toei for the Badlands game, you should definitely check out the ones we've done for, say, G.I. Joe and Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. So many cool podcasts there. And we are also supported by subscribers at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons, where there is a ton of exclusive to Patreon content, over 100 podcasts that you will get extra if you are a $5 subscriber at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons.
And I've been the host of this one, Bob Mackey. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. But yeah, that's the end of this episode of Retronauts. We'll see you again for another new episode. Happy trails to you.